Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, May 5th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the weekend's box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's get right into it today. Let's jump into a recap of the top 10 movies at the domestic box office this past weekend.
You got it, Ben. So it was kind of an interesting weekend. We'll get into that in a second. But this was sort of the first weekend of May. Even though it's not technically summer yet, this is billed as the official kickoff of summer for Hollywood for the most part. So Marvel did that with releasing Thunderbolts, its new team-up movie. That did okay, did $76 million domestically. For most studios and most movies, that would be fantastic. By Marvel standards, it's merely okay. We'll talk a bit more about that in a minute and its long-term prospects. Continuing to kick ass is Sinners, dropping to number two in its third weekend with just a 28% drop, with another $33 million. That has now made almost $180 million domestically. It is now one of Hollywood's biggest original movies in years. It has made $236.7 million worldwide, and yeah, Warner Brothers looks brilliant for that right now. We can talk a little bit more about that here in a bit as well. At number four, we had Still Holding Strong, a Minecraft movie with $13.7 million, dropping just 40% in its fifth weekend. Again, Warner Brothers looking smart there. Coming up on $400 million domestically and $873.4 million worldwide. It will at least pass $900 million worldwide, but a billion now seems like a little bit of a stretch. Number four, we had The Accountant 2 taking a big hit this weekend, $9.4 million, dropping 61%. So that's at $41.1 million domestic, which is okay, but it's lagging pretty bad overseas. That one's going to have to rely on being a VOD and streaming play, which is kind of what Amazon had in mind in the first place, but would have been nicer to see it do a little better in theaters. At number five, we had Until Dawn, Sony's video game adaptation. That made $3.8 million, dropping about 52%, which is okay. That's coming up on $15 million domestic. Still doing pretty strong overseas, so that's coming up on $35 million worldwide. It's not going to be a big hit, but if it can get to $45, $50 million against a $50 million budget, you can probably call that a win. So, you know, take for that what you will. Number six, we had The Amateur, kind of becoming a low-key, I don't want to call it a hit because of its budget, but for a movie that could have otherwise went to streaming, doing okay. $1.8 million in its fourth weekend. $87.7 million worldwide. Quietly decent little numbers there. Number seven, we had The King of Kings, the animated Jesus movie, with another $1.6 million. That one has made almost $58 million domestically. That's a pretty decent little chunk there, too. Number eight, we still had hanging on to the top 10, Warfare, with $1.2 million in its fourth weekend. Passed $24 million domestically this weekend, but that one is on its last gasps. At number nine, we had something called Hit the Third Case, another one of those Indian imports that comes in every once in a while, with $955,000 on 590 screens. And then this one was interesting to me. In the number 10 spot, we had what looks to be another Indian import that I haven't heard of called Guru Nanak Jaz. I'm sure I'm butchering that name, but that made $685,000 on just 119 screens for a stellar per screen average north of $5,700. So the theaters that were playing that enjoyed nice packed houses, which is important. The only thing I should mention is that Nicolas Cage's new movie, The Surfer, opened from Roadside Attractions. That made just $674,000 on over 1,000 screens, which making for just a $621 per screen average. So not all $600,000 openings are made equal.
Okay, well, that's some good context to have. So I think the big discussion point, obviously, this weekend is the performance of Thunderbolts. And I think you have an article up on Slash Film. If it's not published yet, it's going to be published very soon. That is basically like, this movie like did okay. It's kind of hit or miss status is still to be determined. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So look, it's no secret that a lot of times like people that do what I do will get in, you know, kind of get some flack if we declare something a flop on opening weekend. Right. But you know, the thing is people like me that do this week in, week out, we have these markers that we can look at and go, okay, like everything that we know says 90% of the time, this is this movie's trajectory now. Like Snow White declared that a bomb, you know, right off the gate, because, you know, the CinemaScore wasn't there, the opening weekend was soft, the comps are bad. Like, you know, you can look at these points, but then every once in a while you get something that just arrives in this gray area where you can't really call it. Like, it's too close to call. So Thunderbolts is sort of falling into that category. So let's talk a little bit more about the numbers. $76 million domestic, did $86.1 million internationally for $162.1 million globally. That is almost exactly what Eternals made in 2021. Of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies to date, it looks like only 8 other MCU movies of the 36 that have been theatrically released had lower opening weekends. That includes The Marvels, The Incredible Hulk, Ant-Man, Captain America, The First Avenger, Thor, Eternals, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, and Ant-Man and the Wasp. You'll note that the majority of those came out sort of in the pandemic era, and other ones were Phase 1 MCU movies. So, you know, the bulk of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, leading up to Avengers Endgame, it performed better. But that, let's talk about some further context here. Thunderbolts is not an established name or an established franchise. It is also dealing with B-tier Marvel characters. There's no real A-listers in there unless you consider Bucky Barnes an A-lister at this point. I think it's maybe fair to do that, but you get what I'm saying. We're not dealing with Captain America. We're not dealing with Iron Man. We're not dealing with Thor. These are, you know, it's an unknown quantity for most people. The reviews are extremely good. The best Marvel's gotten in years. So that differs wildly from something like Eternals, which was met with at best a mixed reception. And that also gets to the most near comp here, which was Captain America Brave New World, which opened at $88.8 million domestically. So you want to look at Marvel's most recent movie, you go, well, wow, that opened with more than $10 million more. But the reviews for that one were at best mixed, and the audience reception was straight up bad. So that led to a steeper decline in the weeks that came. So, you know, this, that's where, so that's some initial context to sort of paint for you that, like, yes, the opening weekend is good-ish, but what is going to happen in the weeks to come, and what, you know, is going to determine how it plays out. So, you know, I can start there, but there's more we can talk about here.
Yeah, what do you think about the potential for it to make a lot of money internationally? Because that's something that we don't really put a ton of focus on this show. And on the website, occasionally, you'll try to contextualize things by incorporating the global take and stuff like that, you know, just to paint a more accurate picture of how a movie is doing. But we don't really get into that very much on this show anymore because, as we've talked about, international performance of these movies has kind of dropped off in not just Marvel movies, but a lot of American blockbusters has dropped off in recent years because China has kind of shut things down compared to the way that they were, you know, 10 or 15 years ago or whatever. So the fact that it's made more internationally than it has domestically already, does that say anything to you? Is that kind of normal for where we are on the typical Marvel movie trajectory? What do you think about that component of it?
It's normal-ish for like post-pandemic Marvel movie stuff. But yeah, I mean, even if you want to look at something like, you know, one of the more recent big successes for Marvel was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. That did 845 worldwide, but it did, you know, 359 of that domestically versus 486.5 internationally. So that was still weighted slightly better internationally, and those are going to tend to be where you're going to find the hits, right? Like where you can get a little bit of that international juice. Whereas like you look at something like Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, it did 214.5 domestic, 261.5 internationally. You know, that was definitely a miss. So, you know, if you get closer to that 50-50 range, you're going to be in trouble. So I think what you're looking at is, for the moment, Thunderbolts is on a reasonable enough trajectory to where it did just enough more internationally to where you could say, okay, it's got a chance. And I generally try to, especially in my writing, because like it is a global theatrical marketplace. There is so, I think one of my big things is just too much focus on domestic box office because, you know, like something like Elemental made the vast majority of its money, you know, overseas. And it's important to, you know, like there are moviegoers all over the world. These things don't just make money in America. So, I think right now what you're looking at is this movie's kind of got two different paths it can go down. It can go down the Eternals path, which was, you know, $402 million worldwide, with a, you know, 165 of that coming domestically. Or the best case scenario would be it goes the Ant-Man and the Wasp route, the 2018 Ant-Man and the Wasp, which, you know, $75.8 million debut, $216.6 million domestically, but $623 worldwide. So what I would say is that maybe that number is a little bit more even split between domestic and international one and the best case scenario here. But, you know, you could, you, this movie could conceivably get to about 600 worldwide if things go very well. You know, buzz is good. Word of mouth is good. If that carries it the next few weeks without a significant drop, you know, then you could be in decent shape. The slightly good news here is that, you know, this movie had a $180 million budget. Now, that's still incredibly high, but it didn't eclipse that $200 million number like Eternals, like Black Widow, you know, where the Marvels had like a $270 million budget, you know. So it's a slightly more reasonable budget for this kind of movie, because, you know, it may sound like, you know, quote unquote, it's only $20 million, but keep in mind, that's about $40 million worth of box office, because you got to make, you know, theaters keep about half. So you get to profitability a lot quicker on a budget like that. So, you know, that I think it was good to see. It didn't balloon to like 250, you know, because we throw these numbers around so much with these budgets that, like, it feels like people talk about 200 and 250 like it's the same these days, and it just isn't, you know. And yeah. So seeing that 180 was encouraging on some level.
It's also helpful that the movie doesn't look like it suffers at 180. It actually looks good, and we talked about this on Friday's episode, but there are a lot of like practical effects and stuff, and it doesn't look like just a bunch of CG slop, you know. It actually looks like it has a vision, and it didn't look like a compromised movie, which can sometimes happen.
Yeah, and the other thing too to keep in mind here, at 180 million, this was an ensemble film, so you had to pay, you know, David Harbour, Florence Pugh, Sebastian Stan, you know, you got to pay everybody, except for, you know, someone who was only on screen for a few minutes, but we won't talk about that right now. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, whereas you talk about something like Captain America Brave New World, which was also made for supposedly $180 million, you know, you had slightly fewer, I think, big names to pay there. And this is getting into a slightly different discussion. I would argue Thunderbolts probably looks a little better than Captain America Brave New World did. But yeah, I think that, you know, this lays out a path for Marvel of the future that, look, you can keep these under 200, you know, and save those gigantic budgets for the Avengers films, because we know that Doomsday, when that budget comes out, we're all going to, you know, our eyes are going to pop. But yeah, you got to sort of hedge your bets on these other ones. So, you know, I would like to see more Shang-Chi level budgets where you can do it for 150. But, you know, for the moment, I'm okay. I'm happy to see that 180, because, you know, that means, depending on what they spent on marketing, if this makes 550 worldwide, you could still break even in theaters potentially. And, you know, build some positive momentum heading into Fantastic Four and heading into, you know, the next couple Avengers movies. So, you know, it's not great, but it's also not terrible. Like, we'll just have to see how it shakes out. But yeah, if it does finish like Eternals, then, you know, Marvel's had a tough time, you know, launching new franchises. So we'll see.
Okay, so I do want to spoil something that happens at the very end of Thunderbolts. So,
well, Marvel's spoiling this already, so.
That's what I was going to say. That was the only reason that I wanted to bring it up now, is because Marvel themselves are actively spoiling this in billboards in Los Angeles, probably elsewhere by now, maybe even in like digital advertising.
It's all over online. Listening to this. It is all over the place.
So if you somehow don't know what I'm talking about already, and you care enough about Thunderbolts to listen to its a debrief about how it performed the first weekend, but you weren't able to see it yet, maybe skip ahead a few minutes. But Marvel is now removed. They've basically removed the advertising calling it Thunderbolts and are officially emblazoning it with the New Avengers title that the asterisk sort of reveals at the very end of the movie. And they're doing this out in public as presumably as an attempt to maybe drum up some more interest from people who were like, Thunderbolts, I don't know what that is, I'm skipping that. And then now they say, oh, wait a second, it's called New Avengers, maybe that's something that I should invest my time in, my money in, and seek this out. So I was just wondering if you thought that that plan, which seems to me by the asterisk in the title, like it was part of their plan all the time. Like they
probably knew. It was 100% part of the plan. It was 100%
that they were going to do this. Yeah. So do you think that that reveal and that kind of attempt to maybe bring in people who skipped opening weekend is going to put it on the more profitable version of those two possible tracks that you talked about?
It doesn't hurt, right? Like, and the thing that I kept saying, and look, I'm going to put my cards on the table here. We talked about this last weekend, I think. I was one of the only people in our Slack channel excited when they said a Thunderbolts movie was happening. Because, like, for most people, this doesn't mean anything. For me, I was like, hell yeah, that sounds awesome. And then when I saw the movie, part of my, like, sort of softness on it is that it's not really a Thunderbolts movie. Like, it's a new Avengers movie. They backdoored it. You know, like, even though it's kind of a Thunderbolts movie for a lot of it, like, by the end of it, it's, no, we're the new Avengers. So you're not even really getting the Thunderbolts. Like, and... you know, and again, Marvel's revealing that. So I'm not saying anything. You watch the movie, they're just naming this team the new Avengers. So I'm not spoiling anything. That's just what they're doing. So for people like me, it's like, oh, we don't really get Thunderbolts in the future. We get new Avengers, whatever. But I think for the vast majority of people, if you had just named this movie the new Avengers from the beginning with Florence Pugh in the lead role leading a new Avengers team alongside Bucky, that might have been an easier sell to the masses. I understand the cute marketing gimmick with Thunderbolts. These things are in development for years before they actually go out. When Marvel announced this in 2022, they still felt pretty indestructible. They felt like those 2021 movies were like, okay, that was coming off the pandemic. You know, we're still Marvel. We can still, you know, so I think that they might have rethought that decision, you know, in light of what's happened the past couple of years, just in terms of them struggling to find hits outside of like Spider-Man and Guardians, you know. But yeah, I think that that might get more of your casuals on there, but you're also sort of having to then rush a new Avengers marketing campaign for a week, so I don't really know how much that juices. I don't know, we'll see. I mean, it's certainly not gonna hurt, but it's an interesting play, I guess, like, mm-hmm. all things considered.
Yeah
I don't know, it I'd be curious to see what the future of like, let's say this movie is a hit. Like, do you do anything with that Thunderbolts name after the fact? Or do you just lean into the new Avengers? That's what I'm sort of confused about, like, in on a longer timeline, but who knows?
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. All right, so let's take a break, and then we'll come back and get into a couple more box office stories. All right, so I think we do have to talk about Sinners, which you mentioned briefly, and you talked about the drop, and we talked a lot about that on last week's box office episode of, I think it was a 5% when all was said and done, drop between its first and second weekend, which is just extraordinary. And so tell me again what the drop was between weekend 2 and 3 and what you make of that.
So it only dropped 28%, and mind you, these are just estimates we're talking about now. When the actuals come in, who knows? Now here's what's crazy about that. So not only is it the third weekend, Thunderbolts took all of the IMAX screens. So what had been goosing Sinners take is those IMAX. It was sold as an IMAX experience. So those IMAX tickets cost more money. Even without those IMAX screens, Sinners only dropped 28%. That $33 million third weekend is bigger than the third weekend of It. Like, I can't... Now, it's not going to get to 700 million worldwide like It did, but you see my point. Like, these are the kind of movies we're talking about now when we're talking about comparisons here. This movie's still making almost $10,000 per screen in its third weekend. This is crazy. So, like I said, $179.7 million domestic running total, $57 million internationally, $236.7 million worldwide. At this point, $300 million worldwide is assured. Could get to 350, 400, who knows, depending on how this all shakes out. That right now, on the trajectory it's on, as we talked about last weekend, it could end up touching Gravity as far as domestic goes, like in that $280 million ballpark, which is insane. You know, I mean, just truly, like, truly, truly crazy. So the real test is going to be in a couple of weeks here, but by then, I mean, it hardly matters, but when Final Destination Bloodlines arrives. You know, because that's a big horror movie that is going to, you know, be a big hit, and, you know, how much of a bite does that take out of it? But again, by that point, you're 5-6 weekends in, so, like, you know, the money's made, right? Like, that, then you're just, everything else is sort of icing on the cake, ideally. So You know, but yeah, I mean, at this point it is just, you know, it cannot be emphasized how crazy it is that this movie is still holding that well in its third weekend against a Marvel movie with the IMAX screens gone. I mean, it's just truly, truly insane. So I don't have a lot more to say about it right now, but yeah.
Well, I saw a press release saying that they're going to be re-releasing the movie in IMAX. I forget what the dates are, but like sometime pretty soon. And presumably that'll have to be after Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning sort of vacates the IMAX screens, because I know that movie didn't get, or I guess Dead Reckoning didn't get the IMAX screens that it really, really wanted when that movie came out back in 2023. And so Tom Cruise and Paramount and Chris McQuarrie worked really hard to secure those premium large format screens for The Final Reckoning coming up. Yeah, I'm sure you saw that press release or that blast or whatever. So that's going to help Sinners even more, you know, after it will presumably kind of be like lagging again. That might drag more people back for repeat viewing, or some people might be saving it to like see it in that format or something, you know. So
my understanding is that that's just a handful of 70 millimeter screens across the country.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so because the thing is, what people need to understand is these IMAX deals are negotiated, like the calendar for the IMAX year is negotiated well in advance. Like it's very rare, like when you had something like Oppenheimer that essentially like ended up boning Mission Impossible out of its IMAX screens, right? Like, for the most part, like, you know, Mission Impossible is going to get those IMAX screens, and then, you know, Final Destination Bloodlines is getting an IMAX release, which is crazy. Like, you know, but yeah, like these are negotiated well ahead of time. So you can't have Sinners then come in and swoop in on like 200 IMAX screens or something, but they managed to get it on like 7 or 8, I think, 70 millimeter screenings across the country at certain IMAX locations. So that's good. But again, that's still helpful. Like, because if you look at that per screen average, right, we're talking, you know, $10,000, whatever, like that could still add $70,000 to $80,000, if not more, over the course of a week, right? Like that's not insignificant money. You know, so, that still matters. The IMAX thing is, you know, Marvel's not giving them up. Paramount's not giving them up, you know, unless you have something that's just like truly on a tear and something else prospects look bad. You know, IMAX is a business after all, they can renegotiate things. But for the most part, I do think a lot of people, while they can, are still seeking this out in IMAX and other premium formats. So I think maybe the prospect of some sort of re-release later this year, maybe post-summer, maybe like ahead of award season, you know, when there isn't much on IMAX, I could see that.
I was going to suggest that.
But I think that's pretty much a slam dunk for later in the year, but we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we were talking a little bit before the podcast about what we should discuss on today's show. And you said, unfortunately, we should probably discuss Rust, which is the movie where Helena Hutchins, the cinematographer, was killed. I mean, there was like a whole year's worth of news coverage about this. We talked about it on the podcast. We wrote about it a lot on the site. I don't really feel like running through a whole backlog recap of every single thing that happened there. You probably know, if you're listening to this podcast, the basics there. But the point is, the movie Rust, the Western starring Alec Baldwin, has finally come out in some theaters now. So, Ryan, what did you want to say about that?
Yeah, so look, I mean, I feel like in light of that was probably the most pervasive entertainment story of the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, like, truly, like, people that don't follow this stuff, like, everyone knew, because it was such a tragic thing. It was, you know, for this low-budget Western that otherwise might not have really been heard of, right? So you would think, after all of that discussion and all of that, that, like, its actual release would have been a big deal. I was talking to our fearless leader, Jacob Hall, before this, and, like, we're both like, look, it's our job to know these things happening, and neither of us realized that this movie was coming out this weekend. Did you?
No, I had no idea.
Right. And so, like, that's what's absolutely insane to me, is that, like, you would think this would have been a bigger deal, but it was released on 115 screens very quietly. It made just $25,000 for a $217 per screen average. That is beyond lousy. What's crazy to me is just, like, for all of that to amount to this is just... And the reason it's getting released at all, for people that don't really know, is that for Hutchins' family, the settlement that was made is that they essentially are entitled to profits of the film, to settle the lawsuit, because that's essentially like I might be screwing this up, but basically, you know, you can only sue the company. You can't just sue the individuals, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So like the company, there was essentially some shell production company or something set up. So like basically the only way they can get the money is through the release of the movie. So, you know, they through whatever legal proceedings they allowed for it to go forward. In all likelihood, this movie will make its money on VOD and streaming, and there will be a lot of morbid curiosity watching, I'm sure. It just didn't turn into any sort of theatrical event whatsoever. But it is just truly, truly wild to me that after all of that, that it made so it made this is essentially no impact whatsoever. I mean, this is nothing, you know. So I don't know. It's pretty crazy to me. And it is just such a tragedy that Hutchins' last work is, you know, it amounts to this. That's the part that like sucks. You know, that like it deserves better than this. But
and I didn't realize that the family's, I guess, financial benefits or whatever you want to call that horrible situation is tied directly to how the movie performs. Like that, I had no idea that that was even a component of what's going on, which makes it even worse, because I know I have no interest in seeing that movie. Just the whole thing just seems tainted in a way where I'm not morbidly curious about it. I just don't ever want to think about it again because it was so horrible. And I'm guessing there are a lot of other people out there that feel the same way, which is kind of unfortunate, because I obviously feel terrible about what happened and feel terrible for that family. And it would be like, maybe if more people knew that, they would be willing to engage with the movie in a different way to help like ultimately support them or something. But it like puts people in this weird position, you know.
It's very bizarre. Yeah. But and look, it's not like I want to talk about this. I don't know how to talk about it in a way that's responsible, but it feels like it needs to be noted, like, and I feel like it's important for us to point out that hey, this happened. You know, so I don't know what else to say about it, but it is it's a thing. I just hope that maybe, you know, that this can just close the chapter for everyone who was harmed by this, and everyone can truly move forward. That's about all I got. But
okay, so on a slightly lighter note, we should probably end on something a little bit brighter, which is a new Nicolas Cage movie has come out, and it's called The Surfer. And Cage plays a guy who is just trying to surf the breaks at his local beach, and I think he moves back into his hometown, and he has been away for a long time, and the locals, who are now like whatever, a surf gang or something, who kind of like rule that part of the beach, are not thrilled that Cage and his character's son are trying to surf on their turf, essentially. And so it turns into a kind of classic psychedelic Nick Cage rage-a-thon type of situation. I've not seen this movie. I've heard it's pretty wild, but what did you want to say about that one, Ryan?
Not a lot, other than it's kind of just a, you know, it's roadside attraction, so it was never going to break through too much, but it's kind of a bummer that it didn't, because I've heard it's great. I had to miss it at South by Southwest, but you know, so this, again, this will be a VOD play, but it'd be nice to see one of these breakthrough every once in a while. But it seems like lately it's been harder for these, you know, smaller sort of thrillers, actioners, or any of these star-driven sort of, you know, VOD plays to break through at all theatrically. So it just, you know, put it on your radar. I've heard it's good. So, you know, not a lot to say there, but I do think the thing is just, as I pointed out earlier, the stark contrast between that making $675,000 versus the Guru Nanak Jaz making $685,000. You know, those are not created equal given the screen difference and stuff, but that's about all I got.
All right, cool. Well, I think that'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the stories that we talked about. I'm going to link to Ryan's article about Marvel's Thunderbolts isn't really a Thunderbolts movie, and that's disappointing. That's what the headline is. So I'm going to link to that in the show notes. You can check that out. As always, I encourage everyone to go to slashfilm.com and click on the articles that we've got cooked up for you over there. Slash Film Daily is typically published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Now at Menards, save big on everything for your landscaping project. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Plus, get fast free estimates when you use our landscape design program available in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on landscape blocks when you shop at Menards. Also, check out the great deals from our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big.